came across a couple of recordings the other day that I thought might be interesting to listen to. One of them was by Drew Pearson, who was a prominent American journalist and radio commentator during World War II, and he's noted for his syndicated newspaper column, Washington Merry-Go-Round. Now, Pearson began broadcasting over NBC with his program, Drew Pearson Comments, from 1941 until 1953. At one point, he was probably one of the most listened to radio commentators. Drew Pearson's influence was so significant that it prompted a famous flub by Jack Benny announcer Don Wilson, who referred to Pearson as Dreer Pusen. During the war, his broadcast provided insight into the thoughts, concerns, and celebrations of the day. His commentary was insightful, reflective, somber, and uplifting. He was known for his approach towards high-level politicians such as senators, cabinet members, generals, and American presidents. After the war, Pearson continued with his column, and his commentary was broadcast through 1968 on the now-defunct Intermountain Network. His legacy as a journalist and commentator continues to be recognized today. The track you're about to hear features one of Drew Pearson's radio broadcasts. The date of this broadcast was April 22, 1945. Of course, this was less than a month before VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, on May 8, 1945. So things were really breaking down in the government and military of Adolf Hitler, and Drew Pearson presents the news of the day, paying particular attention as to what the Russian army was doing, the breakdown of the Third Reich, and after the death of President Franklin Roosevelt on April 12th, how the new president, Harry Truman, was handling affairs. There is even mention of perhaps having to renew the Potsdam Declaration issued by Allied leaders on July 26, 1945, because the United States had a new president who might want some changes made. There is also the mention of the hope that the war in the Pacific would soon come to an end, and on August 14, 1945, it was announced that Japan had surrendered unconditionally to the Allies, effectively ending World War II. Since then, both August 14th and 15th have been known as VJ Day. The term has also been used for September 2nd, 1945, when Japan's formal surrender took place aboard the USS Missouri, anchored in Tokyo Bay. This brought 6 years of hostilities to a final and highly anticipated close. It is estimated that 45 to 60 million people lost their lives and millions more were injured. It was indeed a long and bloody conflict. This is Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies show, and I thank you for listening.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Drew Pearson, Berlin. The Red Army tonight is advancing up Berlin's three main boulevards with the greatest carnage history has ever seen. They're less than 2 miles from the Potsdamer Platz, the exact center of the city, and less than half a mile from the Royal Palace. A terrific artillery barrage is smashing down on the Unter den Linden, and on the Charlottenburger Platz and the Promenade of Berlin, and on the Tiergarten, the central park of the city. Buildings around the Tiergarten are going up in flames. The city is almost surrounded. Censorship has been abandoned because German officials have fled. Berlin will soon be a ghost city of smoking ruins. Berchtesgaden. Adolf Hitler is reported having reached his bomb-proof shelter at Berchtesgaden after last visit to Berlin over a week ago. An order of the day issued by Hitler has been captured by the British Second Army, foretelling the end of the war, but urging fierce guerrilla battling behind the lines. Milan, Italy. Word has just leaked out that Benito Mussolini again escaped assassination last week when two bombs placed in his Milan villa by agents of the Free French exploded before El Duce returned from his last visit from Hitler. Two of Mussolini's bodyguards were killed. Inside Germany, the Munich radio has just announced that the scheduled performance of Beethoven's unfinished symphony would not be heard tonight. Instead, there will be anti-aircraft artillery practice. Allied headquarters, Germany. The Allies' next big job will be to clean out Denmark and Norway. A lot of German troops are escaping there. However, this will be largely up to the British. It is their zone of operation. The Americans will confine themselves to the south. Berlin. Russian tanks skirting around Berlin to the north are believed finally in contact with the American 9th Army near the River Elbe today. I can state that the American 9th Army patrols had been in the suburbs of Berlin 1 week ago, but withdrew following a request from Stalin and because of an agreement previously made at Yalta that Berlin was to be occupied by the Russians. At that time, February, it was never expected that American troops would get to Berlin first. These facts, being reported in my column today and tomorrow, were denied by Allied headquarters in Paris today, as I fully expected they would be. But they came to me from the highest quarters, and I repeat them as absolutely correct. Temporarily, we've been denied the honor of marching under Berlin's triumphal arch. But there are other things to remember. The Russians have been fighting a long, hard war with a total of around 30 million casualties. And if they wanted the honor of taking Hitler's capital, then a lot of American wives and mothers can be glad that their boys were not killed in the battle for Berlin merely for the sake of glory. The War Department. Last week, a high-ranking German war prisoner, Major General Hans von Schubert, was buried at Como, Mississippi, with all military honors, including the Nazi salute and the Hitler swastika, all with the War Department's permission. Simultaneously, we know from published photographs the tragic, horrible starvation suffered by Allied prisoners in Germany. 2 weeks ago, I suggested that we put German prisoners on bread and water for 2 weeks when our prisoners were starved. That, however, would be only temporary, and I further suggest that as a long-term policy, we cut out the frills for German prisoners, the fruit, the ice cream, the meat, and send instead more food to the starving people of Europe. Washington. Tomorrow, a group of national leaders will appeal to President Truman and the American people to tighten our belts in order to relieve the terrible starvation among our allies. The White House. Secretary of State Stettinius has cabled all U.S. ambassadors and ministers asking for their resignation. It was done at the request of President Truman. Washington. Foreign Minister Molotov arrived here by air just 1 hour ago after the State Department and the White House were kept in a dither for 2 days wondering what had become of him. Molotov had left Moscow 1 hour after Ambassador Harriman. Harriman going by way of Egypt, Molotov by way of Alaska. However, Molotov flew only in the daytime and only when the weather was perfect. One day, when his American pilot considered the weather okay, Molotov decided against it. Some diplomats believe he was taking things slowly so as to give Stalin time to sign the 20-year pact, firmly establishing the Lublin Polish government. Molotov tonight will confer with President Truman, Stettinius, and Foreign Minister Eden. President Truman has advised Stettinius not to budge another inch on Poland, and the deadlock is serious. It's going to take a lot of patience and understanding on both sides, and I'm not sure what the outcome will be. The State Department. The Soviet government has informed us that the Yalta agreements must be revised and reviewed. This is probably aimed at changing their Yalta promise to bring other Polish leaders, now in exile, into the Lublin government. Probably also it is aimed at our own change of policy on island bases taken from Japan. President Roosevelt had agreed at Yalta that these islands should be held by us, acting as trustees for the United Nations. But that has been reversed so we can keep the islands ourselves. Probably the Russians figure that if we can change the Yalta agreements, they can too. So they have now informed us that some of the concessions Stalin made at Yalta were given in return for personal pledges by Roosevelt. And since Mr. Roosevelt is dead, the entire Yalta agreements, they say, will have to be reviewed and revised. The White House. The Wall Street drive to get reactionary Senator George of Georgia appointed Secretary of the Treasury is not likely to succeed. New York, Sidney Hillman, head of the famous Political Action Committee, which helped to swing the last election, will soon resign. Chicago, minority stockholders of Montgomery Ward are collecting proxies to oust Sewell Avery at the Montgomery Ward stockholders meeting in Chicago next week. Now, ladies and gentlemen, last week I suggested that we all hold our fire and give the new president a chance. And during his first week in office, I think he has deserved that check. I watched him at his first press conference and talked with cabinet members after his first cabinet meeting. In both, he did well. The cabinet meeting lasted 1 hour instead of two. Cabinet meetings used to be 15 or 20 minutes late. This one started on time. Truman's policies are going to be very similar to Roosevelt's, but with different emphasis. This is the first time in our history of two great international wars that we've had a Midwestern man as president. And his emphasis will be that of a Missouri Valley man, not an Atlantic coastal. Truman's international bargains will be driven just a little tougher. His labor looms. On the surface, he is something like Calvin Coolidge, but basically a much bigger man. I think I was wrong last week that Jimmy Burns might go to San Francisco as a troubleshooter. Burns crowded the new president just a little too much, was a little too eager. And Harry Truman wants to play his own score on the world's greatest international grand piano. And on the whole, I think he's made a good beginning. And now, just a minute, I'll be back with tonight's predictions of things to come. Prediction number one, war veterans. Last fall, Bernard Baruch recommended that the handling of war veterans be placed under General Frank Hines in the Veterans Administration. However, the Veterans Administration is an old-fashioned bureau created to handle problems of the last war, such as insurance, bonuses, and pensions. It is not geared to handle the 12 million veterans of this war and the new problems involved. So here is my prediction. One of President Truman's early moves will be a complete reorganization of the Veterans Administration. Prediction number two, the fight between big business and little business. After the last war, machine tools, which are the key to all manufacturing, were left in the hands of the big war contractors. Thus, they got a head start over small business in getting back to peacetime profits. Today, the War and Navy departments are urging exactly the same policy. They want General Motors, Ford, Bethlehem Steel, and the other big war contractors to be able to buy the machine tools loaned them by the government. The Army and Navy will not even tell anyone how many machine tools there are on hand, claiming this is a military secret. So here is my prediction. This week, Attorney General Biddle will send a smashing report to Congress criticizing the Army-Navy policy and demanding that small business and the spirit of American fair competition require that all business have a right to purchase wartime machine tools paid for by the American taxpayer and still belonging to him. My last prediction, Soviet cooperation. Today, we're all very much worried over cooperation with our allies for future peace. One problem is Soviet Russia, which speaks a different language, has a different political system, and which for years was ostracized by most of the world, particularly by us. Naturally, when you don't speak to a country for a long time, the road to future understanding is somewhat difficult. It requires a lot of patience. So here is my prediction. In the next 2 weeks, Marshal Stalin will deliver a very important speech in which he will renew Russia's pledge to cooperate for permanent peace. But also, I predict that Stalin will warn that the death of President Roosevelt has created a new international situation which may deeply affect the future peace of the world. Now, ladies and gentlemen, next week I hope to report to you from San Francisco on the progress of the very important United Nations conference. And I want to congratulate Commander Harold Stassen for taking two wounded servicemen to San Francisco as his advisors. When the final piece is written, I hope the State Department will begin early enough to pick an enlisted man as a full-fledged delegate. Instead of a marble monument to an unknown soldier after he's dead, let's pick an unknown soldier while he's alive and let him write a piece that will be more beautiful than marble. Today, John Knight of the Detroit Free Press wrote in tribute to his son killed in Germany, saying, "We have an obligation to those who have made the brave and gallant fight. We have a covenant with the dead. To the Johnnies who are gone and the Johnnies to come, let it be proved by our acts that we sought redemption." And so as the war in Europe draws to a close, for the sake of our fallen heroes, let's work, fight, give to win the peace and make democracy live.